Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the Tap Free Times radio show. This is Dan Meadows coming to you live from Western North Carolina from the Tap Free Times studios on top of one of the mountains over here in the hills, valleys, and mountains of Western North Carolina. I want to welcome everyone here this evening. I want to send out some thoughts and prayers to the people who have been devastated and affected by Hurricane Harvey out in Texas, Louisiana, and any of the other affected areas of being ravaged by this particular storm. Also want to send out some warnings as well as some well wishes for the southeast part of the United States. That includes places like Florida, Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, even up all the way up to North Carolina and what might be beyond that. As the current stance of Hurricane Irma, who is going to be coming ashore within the next couple of days. We ask that you listen to your local news stations, your local emergency management teams and groups that are on the ground there, your local governments to see exactly what you need to do. Quite honestly, if you're in this path, they've already given warnings to do mandatory evacuations in a number of areas. Get your people, get your families, get your pets, get everyone together. Secure everything as best as you can and take the belongings necessary, your documents and all the important papers and jewelry, guns, whatever you got to take with you. And move north, continue going north until you're out of that path of that what's going to be a devastating storm. Our prayers and thoughts are going to be with you as well. I want to thank our federal and state governments in these areas of Louisiana and in places like Florida, especially. The word went out very early with that, very proactive in their response to getting that word out to people to get out of harm's way. You also have the governors of both the state of Florida, the states of South Carolina, Georgia, even here up in North Carolina, telling people to beware, start stocking up, such as that. Where I live at over in Henderson County, North Carolina, there was a warning go out on that. Let me pull it up real quick as we go. Henderson County Sheriff's Office, which is very proactive in emergency management, emergency care. This is for the communities here in Henderson County. Of course, I'm sure sheriffs around the state of North Carolina are also doing this for the community. It says preparation tips for Hurricane Irma from the Henderson County Emergency Services and Henderson County Sheriff's Office. It was dated today, earlier today, September 8, 2017. Current forecast places Henderson County in a high-risk area for heavy rainfall and windy conditions, which may lead to flooding, extensive power outages for several days. He puts out a list or a checklist of things that needs to be done, things that you should think about, especially if you're in areas that have the potential of flooding. Think about flood areas that you might live in. If you don't know if you're in a flood area, ask someone, contact somebody who knows. Then, you need to have all your equipment, all of your belongings put together, your safekeeping items in the event that you need to leave due to the potentials of flooding. There's a lot of tornadoes that get spawned up by heavy and high winds, so you want to make sure that you stay on top of that. Have radio stations going. Have your local weather going. Charge up your phones. Keep them as operational as possible. Do know this, that if towers go down in the area, you may not have cell phone service for your particular cell phones. But if you have the old landline type telephones in your home, even with power outages, many times those landline telephones will still be operational unless you have telephone lines that are down in your area, which may have taken those lines down. So we ask that you stay apprised of it. You stay in the know about what's going on. Sometimes you need to shelter in place. Other times you need to get the hay out of there, and bug out. Get all your necessary stuff together and do so. So our blessings to you. God bless you all, and stay safe as possible. Watch if there's high winds. Watch for things like power lines being down. The potentials of storms. If it's flooding, street appears to be passable, but yet there's a lot of standing water on it. The suggestion is turn around, don't drown in these areas. Well, I'm going to send a great shout out to our friends down in Florida, Don Logan and his response team that's down that way. God bless you all. Hope you keep safe. Blessings to you and your family, Don, and to your animals as well. They are family just as much as some of the members of your own family are, and I know this for a fact. So take care with them. I know you got a lot of help down that way, and help's not far away if you need it as well. So that being said, I also want to thank not only the federal and state governments for putting out the warnings and their support, also for the volunteers and the communities and the neighbors for helping out one another during these crisis times. I want to also thank our heroes, our first responders, and military service members. I know a lot of National Guard has been put into action down in these areas to try to help along and move people along. I do know that power companies and Red Cross and the FEMA groups and all like that, they're going to be staged at safe zones and be able to get in as soon as they can. Water, gas in your vehicle. I know probably right now you're down to the wire trying to get some of that kind of stuff. Food that you need. Think about it. If power goes out for several days, what you're going to do about eating certain types of foods along that line. So be wary of that. And all the volunteers that's helped from around the country into these ravaged areas, we want to thank you. At this time, I do want to give a moment of silence for all of our heroes who go into harm's way. That's the volunteers, the first responders, military service members, both in the United States and abroad. And for those fallen heroes that are out there, our thoughts, our prayers are with you, your families, and Godspeed for each and every one of you. And now for a moment of silence. Okay, I want to thank you for that moment of silence, and God bless you all. I'm going to go to a short break. Following that break, we're going to talk about tonight's show, which is going to talk about concealed carry, rules of engagement for the armed citizen. And welcome back, everyone, to the Tap Three Times Radio Show. Dan Meadows coming to you live from Western North Carolina. Tonight's show, we're going to be talking about rules of engagement for the armed citizen. I'm going to try to cover a lot of information and details about what's going on, maybe in your local area, local communities. I'm going to talk about laws that pertain to many of the North Carolina laws that we have, but I encourage you, I recommend for each and every one of you is to know your own state, your own jurisdiction, your own cities, your towns, your county. Know the laws for your area while you're carrying, ever before you decide to use a firearm in defense of yourself and defense of others. Again, tonight's show is on concealed carry rules of engagement for armed citizens. Now, there's a lot of people out there that that don't have concealed carry permits. A lot of counties or states where they have the ability to open carry. They have open carry laws. And so there's not necessarily a need to conceal carry. We'll talk about the pros and cons of both concealed and open carry here in a bit. But when you're talking about concealed carry, you talk about maybe within your particular state that you've taken some type of course involved in concealed carry of a firearm, that you've had to get some type of permit that was required by your county sheriff's office or one of the courts, the local courts for your particular area, maybe magistrate courts or probate courts, whatever it is for your particular area that governs the jurisdiction of concealed carry permits. In some states, they don't even call them concealed carry permits. They call them gun permits. Some of them call a FOID or it's a firearms type of card or authorization for you to be able to even have a type of permit. It's kind of an identification card for you to have that. And in some cases, like in the state of New York, you not only have a permit to carry, but you have a separate permit that is for the ownership of a handgun. State of New York, if you ever travel to the state of New York or plan to go live in the state of New York, you need to really check with the laws up there because it's totally different. And in some cases, the timelines to even get a concealed carry permit in the state of New York may last anywhere from 6 to 18 months. I know this because I used to live up there, used to help with one of the gun ranges up in the western part of the state of New York. Used to sell guns up there, used to help run the gun range that's up in that area. And I know quite a bit about the laws for that. Used to teach the concealed carry for the state, which is totally different than it is here in the state of North Carolina. The requirements are different. You can't even, in the state of New York, legally touch a handgun. I did say legally, mind you, touch a handgun and shoot a handgun, carry a handgun, own a handgun up there, unless you have that pistol permit. Long guns are different, and they're handled quite a bit different as well. So when we're talking about concealed carry, I refer to, again, many times to the laws for the state of North Carolina for concealed carry and what's required of that. So when we're talking about the laws, we're talking about how would you carry, what would you carry, what's the justification for it? Are there any limitations for the type of gun that you carry, how you carry it, the type of ammunition that you carry? North Carolina is a very permissive state. It's a very it's a shall issue state that we have here. And so the shall issue state, the very permissive state, is this: if you've passed the background check that the law enforcement divisions do, if you pass the mental health checks that the state would do for you, and talking about your local or your state mental health offices or departments, also with the local hospitals that they do checks on you as well. If you pass both of those, then the state of North Carolina, and you don't have any felony warrants, anything along that lines, and certain disqualifiers that are associated to having been arrested or something for, even on some misdemeanor type charges, you may get a handgun now, unless you're under the things with the felonies and such as that. So That being said, you've taken a class which is required of an 8-hour class, requires a shooting practicals, it requires a written test, it requires a minimum of 2 hours of the law, understanding the laws for the state of North Carolina. They shall issue you a concealed carry permit. So that's what the permissive or shall issue state means. Other states like Chicago, Illinois, you've got California, you have Oregon, places like Boston, Massachusetts area, New Jersey, again, New York, places along that lines have a may issue requirement for them. And may issue, what that means is you can pass that background check, you can pass that mental health check, but why do you, Mr. or Ms. Citizen, why do you want to carry a gun? Have you been assaulted? Have you? Do you have a past history of domestic violence that you've been the victim of? Are you being stalked? Are you in business that requires you to have a firearm? There has to be certain requirements or stipulations that even would allow you to do that. And in some places, like Hawaii, it's been quite some time since they have given out, except for key people, maybe politicians, whoever, have even given out concealed carry permits. And there's places in California, it's the same way. There are some law enforcement officials who feel that, you know, the only people that should carry firearms are law enforcement or military. So if you live in those particular jurisdictions, you may not even get a carry permit whatsoever, whether it's concealed or even in an open carry. And for some states, like the state of North Carolina, you have an open carry and a concealed carry law. You need a permit for concealed carry, but you don't need a permit for open carry. But if you're going to travel, you need to know what the states are under reciprocity. You're going from one state to the next, what their laws are. Just because North Carolina allows you to open carry or allows you to conceal carry in a church, doesn't mean when you go down to South Carolina or other states along that lines that you can do the same thing, that you can go into a church and carry a concealed carry handgun, or that you can walk around in an open carry fashion with your firearm. So, you know, when we're talking about concealed carry rules of engagements, I'm going to read this to you. It says, concealed carry holders are armed citizens. They are the ones who pass the background checks, the mental health evaluations, interviews, and have even had their fingerprints taken. Well, what makes them, the armed citizens, safe in carrying a handgun around with them for self-defense? Not all states requires that a person be able to shoot a gun effectively, if at all. Some states, like the state of Virginia, you can actually go online, take an interactive little program there, pay $70+. It's like it's a bit more than that. Download your own little certificate, get the application for a non-resident for the state of Virginia, send up your packet information in, send a fingerprint card in, send the monies in. And then if you're approved, they'll send you a concealed carry permit for the state of Virginia, which has reciprocity with many other states. The problem is that, like if here in the state of North Carolina, if you do that, and if you wanted to make purchase of a handgun here in the state of North Carolina, you're going to need to go to the sheriff's office to get a purchase permit, because they're not going to recognize that permit from the state of Virginia to purchase a firearm, even though you are a resident of the state of North Carolina. They require you to get a state of North Carolina concealed carry permit, which is required of you, that you have to take a concealed carry class, which is like a gun safety class anyway. So, you know, all of this is required of you. I'm going to continue reading. Some states require that you sit through a class with a certified instructor, write a test, shoot a qualifying score at the gun range. Well, even here in the state of North Carolina, I've seen instructors kind of bend the rules a little bit, not require you to shoot as good as you need to, and say, you know, okay, you shot well enough, we'll pass you. And that is unfortunate, because they have not raised the bar of excellence for their students. They have not raised the bar of expectations for their students. What they've done is actually given them something that they did not earn. Now, if you can't shoot, you know, that's what we have shooting classes for. One instructor I was talking to earlier today out towards the Charlotte way, if you don't qualify, if you don't shoot well enough, then you can come back and you can continue to come back until you shoot. Here in the state of North Carolina, for me, at TAP Three Times group of companies, the TAP Three Times Firearms Program, I teach people how to shoot. They know how to shoot ever before they even step onto a gun range. And I have yet to have any one of my people not qualify. And I assure you, I can put most all of my students up against any student here in the state of North Carolina or maybe even in other states. And they're going to shoot far better than most because I've raised that bar of expectation and excellence for each one of my students. I don't see that always in some of the other classes that happen around here in Western North Carolina or even in other parts of North Carolina where I do travel and teach. So others allow you to take a interactive program. I talked about that earlier, answer a few questions, and then you're awarded a certificate. Some places, like in the state of New York, you sit through a four-hour safe type course. You truly, honestly, except for when I was teaching up there, which I raised expectations and the bar of excellence for many classes that are taught. They don't teach you much about concealed carry at all. It's more about the gun safety. Then once you've taken the gun safety class, and then once you've applied, then and only then when you get that your permit, whether it's a permit to own or a permit to carry, are you allowed to go into a gun shop, pawn shop, wherever you decide to make purchase of a gun, and then you can legally touch a gun, go shoot a handgun, whatever. Legally in that state. Luckily, North Carolina is not like that, but they do require you to take a good class. And if you let that permit expire, beyond 30 days, you're going to have to come back and take a class again. So, you know, if you're over in Western North Carolina, you want to travel here, because I do get people traveling in from out of town as well. A lot of the neighboring counties, you know, far away as I've had some come far away from Guilford County over to here to Western North Carolina just to take our TAP Three Times classes. Anyway, move on. When you apply for that permit, you know, that's not the end of it. You need to know and understand more about shooting. I was out at a gun range yesterday, a young lady at the gun range yesterday, didn't feel confident with her gun. I found that in many cases, even though they've taken a class, their confidence level wasn't there. Now, they may have been shown everything that they needed to know about going out and their instructors encouraging them to go practice about shooting. And when you talk about rules of engagement, you need to know what it is you're carrying, how to deploy the gun, when to shoot, when not to shoot. These are the things that many times are taught in some of the classes, but they're not taught in all the classes. But one of the things that the instructors may encourage you to do is one that's most often neglected, and that's going out and practicing with your gun, especially practicing with your gun how you would carry. So we're going to talk about a little bit of that in a minute. So let's talk about justified use of self-defense. I'm going to talk to you about the North Carolina laws, and basically this is under North Carolina common law. A citizen is legally justified in using deadly force against another if and only if the citizen actually believes deadly force is necessary to prevent an imminent threat of death, great bodily harm, or sexual assault. I'm going to break those down in just a minute, but I just want you to know those are the three key areas there: imminent threat of death, great bodily harm, or sexual assault. Number two, that the facts and circumstances prompting that belief would cause a person of ordinary firmness to believe that deadly force was necessary to prevent an imminent threat of death, great bodily harm, or sexual assault. Ordinary firmness, sound mind and body, knowing right from wrong, maybe. The citizen using deadly force was not an instigator and aggressor who voluntarily provoked, entered, or continued the conflict leading to deadly force. What does that mean? I can't come up, start a fight with you, and just so I can pop a cap on you, just so I can pull the trigger on you. I can't do that. I can't continue in the fight that leads to deadly force to happening. If I do, I could be arrested for that and possibly charged with voluntary manslaughter. And that the force used was not excessive, greater than reasonably needed to overcome a threat posed by a hostile aggressor. Now, in the state of North Carolina, we have a stand your ground law. We have Castle Doctrine. We have a stand your ground law. And in the state of North Carolina, you have no duty to retreat. So I'm going to talk here in just a moment. In your home, motor vehicle, and in your workplace, you have no duty to retreat. Now, there's sheltering in place. Whether you're at home, at your work, places like that, you have certain protocols, you have certain standards or policies regarding firearms in a workplace. You need to adhere to that. You need to understand that and know what your rights are in respect to that and what the rights are of the employer in respect to that as well. So again, but you have no duty to retreat. Even in outside the home, motor vehicle, workplace, is that the only place that you can protect yourself? No. Any place where a person has a legal right to be, you could protect yourself. Anywhere that you have a legal right to be. So if it's a conspicuously placed sign saying no carriage of guns, no carrying of guns, then that's part of the laws here in North Carolina. That is a private place. It's a private business. It's a private company, whatever like that. No firearms in there. There may be other conspicuously placed signs that are places like in state government buildings, federal government buildings, that you can't carry a gun legally. But in other places that you can legally carry a gun, as long as you're legal to carry that gun there, you have a right to be able to protect yourself. You have a right to protect yourself in anything, in any amount of force necessary, up to but not including deadly force, because in these areas you don't carry your firearm. So just to kind of touch on that particular subject as well. You know, there's things about excessive force. There's things about being an aggressor. You can't be an aggressor. You can be charged with voluntary manslaughter if you're found to do that. If you use excessive force in respect. Now, not only can you protect yourself, you can also protect others. When we're talking about rules of engagement for the armed citizen, you can protect others as well. And it says a citizen may intervene and use deadly force in defense of another when, under the facts and circumstances, it reasonably appeared necessary to save the other person from an imminent threat of death, grave bodily harm, or sexual assault, but only to the extent the other person was entitled to use deadly force in self-defense. Excessive force in defense of others is not allowed, and neither the intervener nor the person being threatened can be the instigator, voluntarily provoking a conflict for deadly force to be used. I use this example in my concealed carry classes a lot and in my other classes as well. You need to know what the facts and circumstances are ever before you pull your gun, ever before you deploy that gun, ever before you pull the trigger on that gun. Now, I talked about something earlier. You talked about imminent threat of death, great bodily harm, but it also talked about sexual assault. Now, in North Carolina, many of the laws was rewritten. So I'm going to read what it says. A sexual assault would include rape, sexual offense, or forcible crimes against nature, or any attempts to do any such act. Not all sexual assaults justify the use of deadly force. Much of the law on the justified self-defense in North Carolina was written before the legislature redefined sexual offenses in this state. Both basically, there are two categories of sexual offenses. There's rape and sexual assaults. Therefore, if it's not rape, it's sexual assaults. Here's the key thing. Many sexual assault offenses do not meet the standard for inclusion in justified self-defense formula. Here's the key. Only sexual assaults that have a risk of death or great bodily harm should be included. There has to be a risk of death or great bodily harm. So if you are sexually assaulted, if someone inappropriately touches you, can you shoot them? No. If someone inappropriately touches you and threatens your life, shows a weapon, something along that line, can you shoot them? If the facts and circumstances stand to back up that claim, then yes, you could. Again, there has to be an imminent threat of death or great bodily harm. So you need to know what your laws are, not only for the state of North Carolina, what I'm talking to you about, but know the laws for your area. I posted on my Facebook today, some of the things about laws on looting and things like that, and we're going to talk about here shortly. Can you shoot someone to protect property? The law does not permit the use of deadly force solely to protect property or to prevent theft or to regain stolen property. And we're going to talk about looting and stuff in a second. An owner cannot shoot a thief before, during, or after a theft. The same rule prohibits deadly force to prevent injury, which is damage or vandalism to property. Can you do that? Absolutely not. One of the most important laws for the state of North Carolina is one I'm going to read. It said North Carolina does allow the use of defensive force up to and including deadly force against an individual who has unlawfully entered or is attempting to unlawfully enter a home, motor vehicle, or workplace. But what needs to be present? An imminent threat of death or great bodily harm. But then again, it says, one more time, it says, North Carolina does allow the use of defensive force up to and including deadly force against an individual who has unlawfully entered or is attempting to unlawfully enter a home, motor vehicle, and workplace. We're also talk about things like kidnapping. You know, there's the kidnapping or the taking of children and such as that. You need to know those laws ever before, again, you pull the gun, deploy the gun, or even fire that gun. So know what the laws are for your area ever before you do that. Now, in North Carolina, which is different from, let's say, my buddy's state down in Florida, which, you know, you can be civilly sued for certain types of gun-related gun usage cases and like that. But in the state of North Carolina, you know, you have a right to defend yourself. You have a right to defend others. You have a right to defend others, you know, in their home, motor vehicle, workplace, or wherever they have a legal right to be at as well. But a citizen who uses or who lawfully uses defensive force in compliance with these statutes in the state of North Carolina is immune from civil and criminal liability. That doesn't mean you might not be picked up, that you might not be questioned. It doesn't mean that you might not be sued. But if you are justified in the use of deadly force in defense of yourself and defense of others, most probably you will not be criminally charged or criminally found guilty, or you may not be civilly charged and found guilty of like a wrongful death or something like that. So again, know the laws for your state and based upon, you know, that gun usage as well. To go on and talk about a number of things, you have escalation of force. You have certain requirements that you do when you're carrying a gun. I mean, I could go on and on and for hours. And again, I teach the laws portion of this course nearly every week here in the state of North Carolina. It's very detailed. There's a minimum of 2 hours of law only that we have to teach here in the state of North Carolina for all the people who go through our concealed carry. I'm going to take a real short break. And when we come back, we'll be talking more about rules of engagement and looting and everything along that lines. And welcome back to the Tap Free Times Radio Show. This is Dan Meadows, your host, also called a Shooting Whisperer. I want to encourage every one of you to go by our website. Our website is tap3x.com. I call it Tap Three Times, but you kind of have to write it a little bit different. That's T as in Tom, A as in Apple, P as in Papa, the number 3, X as in x-ray.com. That's tap3x.com, or what we call it, Tap Three Times. Dot com. Be sure to go by our website. If you're ever in the Western North Carolina area, be sure to look us up. We also have many classes that we teach each and every month. I believe we teach more firearms classes for our particular studio here in Western North Carolina than any other instructor does over this way. We encourage you to look us up, look at our classes, register online, or you just give us a call. And we do appreciate that. So back to it. We talked about rules of engagement. We're going to fix them to talk about rules of engagement. Well, that's what the classes or this particular session is about, this radio show. I'm going to read you a couple of things that are military related on this and then just kind of touch on it. Formally, rules of engagement refer to the orders issued by a competent military authority that delineate when, where, how, and against whom military force may be used, and they have implications for what actions soldiers may take on their own authority and what directives may be issued by commanding officer. Rules of engagement are part of a general recognition that procedures and standards are essential to the conduct and effectiveness of civilized warfare. And we're not necessarily talking about warfare here in the streets of the United States, or are we? Now, we're not talking about forming militias and going down the road and taking back or have anything against a tyrannical government or anything along that line. We're talking about armed citizens protecting themselves, protecting their families. Rules of engagement must be consistent while also accounting for a variety of potential scenarios and the political or military aspects of a given situation. They might describe appropriate action regarding unarmed mobs, the property of local civilians, the use of force in self-defense, the returning of hostile fire, prisoners, the level of hostility, that is, whether the country is at war, as well as a number of other issues. Now, I'm talking about rules of engagement that are for military service members. Again, that's not necessarily what we're talking about here, but I want you to kind of see a history of where this came about and how it is that it's come about. When we're talking about use of force to protect ourselves, you know, I hear a lot of people talking about, well, why don't we just shoot a warning shot? Why don't we just shoot a round off in the air, shoot a round into the ground, just kind of scare them off? Or you could do what the former Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, would say, you know, buy a shotgun, fire a couple of rounds off in the air. That'll scare them away. Well, I assure you, Joe, and I always say it isn't so, Joe. That's not always the case. And there have been some who have taken your advice and have been arrested for doing just such act. Here's one right here, a New Hampshire man. Being arrested on reckless endangerment for discharging a firearm into the ground as a warning shot to stop a burglar. So when you're in an area that has laws against the discharge of a firearm within the city or corporate limits or something along that line, you may be liable and you may don't be surprised if you are arrested. Again, I encourage everyone to know what the laws are for your area. Plus, I always say don't fire a warning shot. You've wasted a round. You wasted a bullet, number one, that you might need in defense of yourself or someone else. The discharge of that bullet may hit an innocent person or persons, property, damaged property, whatever. So you need to really beware of what you're doing with that. When they're talking about rules of engagement, you need, in some cases, develop your own rules. Develop your own rules for that. Know what your escalation of force is based on the laws for your particular state. You know, just because you pull a gun in defense of yourself or defense of others, you got it out. Well, that doesn't mean, hey, got it out, might as well use it, right? Well, not necessarily so. There's always escalation, and there could be, in fact, de-escalation of force needed to overcome the threat posed by someone else. So keep that in mind as you're doing it. The Army, I know, uses an acronym called RAMP, Return to Fire with Aim Fire. Now, I go to gun ranges weekly. I was there yesterday. I'll be going again tomorrow. I spend a lot of time at the gun range, probably more so than a lot of instructors do. When we're talking about returned fire with aimed fire, there are people out there, when I go to the gun ranges, whether they're participating in another class or not, whether they are there on their own, shooting on their own, which are quite honestly, they shouldn't be shooting at all unless they have some kind of skills put upon them by the participation of some type of class for gun safety, for gun marksmanship training, and whatever. So, you know, there's some people, they can't hit the target. They knock the cables down, knock the targets down, just a number of things. You want to return fire with aimed fire. You want to return force with force. You always have a right to repel a hostile attack with the necessary force. You know, you hear them talk about, well, never bring a knife to a gunfight. Well, that's probably very a true statement to keep in mind there. But you want to use the amount of force necessary, including deadly force, if it is required. You need to anticipate attacks. I talk about being vigilant in public. I talk about being vigilant even in your own homes. But anticipate attacks. Think about scenarios. What ifs? When you go out, you're out in public, you're out at the supermarket, you're out at a show that allows you, or a theater type show that allows you to carry guns with you. And there's not many of them, by the way. So, you know, anticipate, you know, certain attacks to take place when you're walking down a road, what might take place as well. Measure the amount of force that you need to use. You know, there's people out there that, you know, I've had them attend my one-on-one session, my private session. They take a concealed carry class, and then they buy a gun, and they've never shot that gun. They throw it in the purse, or they've had limited use, limited shooting with a particular gun, and they're more of an endangerment to themselves than anyone else. And in some cases, you know, I think, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to carry a gun. I feel safer now. Well, that's kind of a false badge of courage, if you will, because you've not practiced with it, and especially you need to practice how you carry it as well. You need to protect yourself by using deadly force if it's necessary, and you need to have it in the framework and your mindset that if I have to use deadly force, I will do that. I also tell you, don't use warning shots. You know, you're liable to hurt someone else that you don't need to, in that respect. You know, I was talking about that. Masoud Ayoob, and I may not have said his last name right, but anyway, he's a preeminent person for teaching firearms. He's done it for many years, law enforcement background. He's written a number of books. He does many shooting events, shooting classes across the United States. You ever get the opportunity to take one of his classes, you should. But here's a couple of things about his 10 commandments of carry. And he teaches it in his class. And I'm just sharing this from one of his articles written back in 2008. You know, it says, if you carry, always carry. I encourage you, and I tell my people in the class, you know, you need to carry as often as you can. Some people say, well, I want to get a concealed carry permit because I want to buy guns. I want it to be easier for me to buy guns. I understand that, but maybe you should think about carrying. And where is the more likelihood of you going to be, attacked, picked out as being a victim? Probably in areas that you frequent more often than the place where you might go down to, you know, one particular city, one particular town, once in a while. You need to carry as often as you can with that. I see this quite often. I get people coming to my class and they're there and for concealed carry classes. Well, if I had to pull my gun, I have to shoot someone. So one of Masoud Ayoob's areas here, comments here that he has is, don't care if you aren't prepared to use it. And that's quite, you know, I hear that in my classes a lot. I ask people, why do you want to take a concealed carry class? Why? And there's many times I get a lot of different answers per person, but there are some that I get that, you know, that's just, you know, it's way out there because they had no idea that if they carry a gun, they may in fact have to use it. Don't let the gun make you reckless. What do I mean by that? Just because you have a gun doesn't mean the perp, the aggressor, the intruder doesn't have a gun. While you're thinking about shooting at them, they're thinking about shooting at you as well. And, you know, if it's action against reaction and you are the reactor, you may not beat them to the trigger pull. And that may mean the difference of you winning or losing or even surviving the threat. So think about that as well. Touch on one more here. Let's see. If you go into an area, if you go in the States, if it says concealed, you need to make sure it's concealed. That's just an area that he did that. Maximize your firearms familiarity. That's the last one I'm going to cover off his works from Masada Yub. You need to be familiar with your firearms, and if you're not, you're a danger to yourself. You're probably a danger to others as well. So you need to know gun safety. You need to know why you're carrying, how you're carrying, what it is you're carrying, what type of ammunition you're carrying, and you need to get off the bench. Now, I can do a whole class on just shooting, but you need to get off the bench. How many of you in radio world here today that's listening in, how many of you carry your shooting bench with you from the gun range or from your home if you go out back and shoot, a little table or whatever? How many of you carry that with you everywhere? Okay, I don't see too many hands out there. So the answer is none of you do. None of you is going to carry that with you. So you need to get off the bench. Yes, for many cases, many gun ranges only allow you to shoot from the bench. You can't draw from a holster and such as that, unless you have a skilled and qualified instructor. And I do mean skilled and qualified. Not every instructor is skilled and qualified, I might add. But it needs to be a skilled and qualified instructor to teach you how to do it effectively. You're going to carry a gun. You're going to carry extra ammunition, which I encourage you to do. Lots of ammunition. Carry extra with you, but you need to practice how you carry. If it's winter season, you got jackets, you got layers of clothes, you need to look at that as well. Now, when they talk about law enforcement, they talk about different things, and this is some that's been out there for years. I'm just going to touch on a few of these. Rules for a gunfight. Now, that's absolutely what it is. You're not Wyatt Earp or you know, an Annie Oakley type shooter or anything like that. You're out there in a gunfight. It's an urban gunfight. It could be a gunfight in your home. Could be while you're in your vehicle. Could be while you're at work. Could be when you're at the mall shopping. Could be out anywhere. You could be hiking or whatever, and you need to use that gun. Rules for a gunfight is what I'm talking about here. So in this case, it says bring a gun, preferably. Bring at least two guns. And bring all your friends who have guns. Anything worth shooting is worth shooting twice. Ammo is cheap. Life is expensive. So I showed a young lady yesterday about single shooting. One bullet down range, one trigger squeeze like that. And then multiples of shooting, double taps. Tap three times, as I call it. Two taps to the chest, one tap to the head. And the reasons for that. And if you don't know that, you know, contact me. Contact an instructor who can teach you how to do that. Because not one, you know, it's not Hollywood. One round not necessarily is going to hurt someone down. But you don't want to be excessive about it and just keep pumping rounds down range when maybe one would have stopped them. So you need to know the difference in that as well. Only hits count. The only thing worse than a miss is a slow miss. If you cannot effectively put rounds on your target, then you need to practice. And you need to practice a lot. You need to get it with an instructor who can teach you how to shoot. Because if you can't shoot, you can't stop the threat. If you can't hit your target, you can't stop the threat. You need to learn to stop the threat. I'm not saying you need to learn how to kill someone. You need to learn to stop the threat. Because it's your life or theirs, and I think your life is much more valuable than some thug land who hurt, injure your family as well. Let me have a few other things here. Have a plan. Have a backup plan because the first one didn't work is something to talk about. Don't drop your guard. You know, they talk about tactical loads and 360 scans. Not everyone goes along with that. but you need to know what's around you. You know, this is not, bullseye shooting for some competition match. Keep both your eyes open. You may need both of them because of low light conditions or even for peripheral vision. Need to wash the hands. I'm telling you, people, hands kill. Hands kill. You have to tell that to law enforcement officers. When I've taught them in law enforcement classes and officer survival classes and stuff over the years, watch the hands. Be wary of what you're doing when you make approach or whatever. The faster you finish the fight, the less shot you will get. Just because you're pumping rounds downrange at them doesn't mean they're pumping rounds downrange at you. You need to end it quickly, because if you don't, maybe one of them rounds is going to take you out, and they are going to survive the threat versus you. Enough on that. I can talk on those all days. Now let's talk about looting. So we've got events and reported activities taking place over in the states of Texas and in Louisiana about looting. You've heard it many times down in New Orleans, Jefferson Parish, and some of the affected areas down after Hurricane Katrina. There was videos. I'm trying to remember the news station. It may have been NBC. It was one of the major stations, if you will, during that time, that filmed people going into places like Walmart, not to take food, but to take shiny things out with them, go into cash registers. There was even law enforcement officers in uniform looting Walmart down there, and it was on video, on film, that they were doing that. And, you know, there's all kinds of stuff I'm reading and hearing and talking to people about the pros and cons about looting, and there should be some justification to allow them to do certain things. But when people go into a business and they take out things like alcohol and such as that, that's not for the sustenance of life. Although some of you might think differently, you know, after 5 in the afternoon, but that's not keeping your family fed. That extra clothing that you're looting, that diamond rings and stuff, those movies and stuff that you're getting, those TVs that you're getting, all those shiny things, stuff like that, that's not for the sustenance of life. That's not water and stuff like that you might need. And oh, by the way, if you are breaking in and looting in places like that, did you leave them a note and say, look, it's, you know, I'm trying to just feed my family. I'm trying to keep my family fed and watered. Well, this is not what you're doing. You're actually breaking in. And oh, by the way, it is against the law to loot. When I'm looking at this paper here about looting generally is the crime of stealing during a state of emergency or natural disaster caused by earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes, fires, storms. To be convicted of looting, you must first be convicted of an underlying theft crime. Well, what comes to mind to begin with is that you broke into that place. Even if the place was damaged to a point that had ease of access to getting in, you still burglarized that place. You still broke into that place. So the crime of theft for burglary is with the intent of taking and stealing something. Well, there are certain areas. When you look at places like California or California, so if you're anyone listening from California, it's not against you people. It's against the way the laws are established. You can actually, the maximum penalty might be up to 1 year in prison, minimum 180 days in jail. And depending on your lawyer, you might even get probation for the burglary charge. So, you know, just let you off for stealing and breaking into someone else's property, whether it's a business or a home. Louisiana, a little bit more punishable. They really got onto it after Hurricane Katrina. Got about 5 minutes left after Hurricane Katrina. So they got on a little bit heavier than that. Is it legal to loot? No, it's not legal to loot, regardless if you're here in the United States or in other places as well. It's not legal to do that. There are some places that say, well, if it's for the community good, if it's for the higher good of what's going on, are you feeding your family or are you taking shiny things? That might be a difference right there. But in most cases, you're going to be arrested if you're caught and locked up. What about people protecting their business? Do they have a right to? You know, in the state of Texas, they talk about looters and stuff like that. You know, they're talking about, you know, shooting people and there being a right to be able to do that. I'm trying to find this real quick with the limited amount of time that I've got left here. Let's see. However, Texas law allows property owners to use deadly force to protect their properties if, among other things, the owner reasonably believes that use of non-deadly force to protect property will put someone at risk of death or bodily injury. Now, if you're coming in and you're damaging properties and there's a whole bunch of you and stuff like that, and there's some facts and circumstances to put together, one plus one plus one, to kind of figure out that, you know, there's a potential of me getting injured, serious risk of death, or even great bodily injury. So you need to take that in mind as well. So these people protecting their properties, they have a right to do that. That is their property. It's not yours. Is it ever legal to shoot trespassers? Some of the questions that I've been approached with here and like that. There needs to be imminent threat of death or great bodily harm associated to it. There are some people that just puts up sign and says, oh yeah, we can shoot trespassers. Well, is the person trespassing on your property or trying to break into your business? That's a big thing to try to know and to understand. You know, we can talk about this quite often. We can talk about this in greater detail. You know, when you were talking about rules of engagement, there are rules. You need to know what the rules are. You need to know what the laws are for your particular state ever before you pull that gun, brandish that gun, point that gun, pull that trigger on that gun. I wrote an article called 911, I Just Shot Someone. And it's big on the internet. You could put my name in, 911, I Just Shot Someone by Dan Meadows. The Daily Caller continues to repost it. I appreciate them for doing that. But it is a go-to article for defensive gun use encounters, the before, during, and the after effects of that. Please keep that in mind when you're trying to protect yourself and to protect others. Remember the rules of engagement for the armed citizen. You need to know what those rules are to protect you and to protect others. Next Friday's show is going to be on gun ownership, gun safety, and gun range rules. I'm going to have a special guest with me. It's going to be Jason Hyatt, or Jay Hyatt as he likes to be called. He's the host of the Shooter's Rest radio show. He's a firearms instructor. He likes to work on guns. He likes to build guns. He's a really great guy. I've known him for some time now. I kind of help him co-host his great show. Myself, Oscar, Don Logan, a number of people, April Strong, when she's available, we all do that great radio show. So I'm fixing to have to close out here in just a moment. Again, God bless you all, and please be safe, especially with this upcoming storm that's coming around. I got my 90-second cue to cue out here in just a moment. So I just ask every one of you to be safe, be looking for opportunities and security down in these particular areas. Look at my webpage, look at my at tap3x.com. Go look at our Facebook page as well, facebook.com/tap3x or tap3x. This is Dan Meadows. I look forward to seeing you next time on the Tap Show.